stark political divides were on display in the U.S. House of Representatives today as lawmakers debated President Biden's $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package. Democratic House Budget Committee Chair John Yarmuth called it one of the most consequential pieces of legislation in modern history.
It will cut the child poverty rate in half. In half. Just think about what that will mean for those children and their futures and the future of our country.
In response, Congressman Jason Smith of Missouri urged fellow Republicans to vote no.
Rewards the political class, not the working class. That should be the name of this bailout plan.
President Biden is expected to sign this bill into law, and tomorrow night he'll give his first primetime address, marking the day 1 year ago that the World Health Organization declared the coronavirus outbreak a pandemic. Our political strategist joins us now. Matt Mikowiak is a Republican. Welcome.
Hey there.
And Jamal Simmons, a Democrat. Jamal, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
So, Jamal, this is President Biden's 50th day in office now, and he's on track to sign his first major legislative accomplishment. How are Democrats feeling today?
I think Democrats feel the way Joe Biden felt when the health care bill got passed. It was a big expletive deleting deal, right? people are very happy. As you heard in the package, child poverty is going to be down by half. There's $31 billion in there for Native American communities and $39 billion for child care infrastructure. You know, the list goes on of things, not just the $1,400 payment. For families, the Democrats are going to make sure there's a lot of things that are retrofitted for the current economy that we have, at least for the foreseeable future, next couple of years. So, of course, everybody wants to focus on what was missing. There are lots of people in the media who want to focus on what's missing from the package, but there's a lot that's there for people to be pleased about and families to do better with.
Well, and yet, Matt, no Republicans are on board. Why not? Polls show that this bill is pretty popular with a wide swath of America.
Well, I don't think very many Americans know what's in the bill. I think the fact that it's being called a COVID relief bill, you know, probably makes people want to be for it. The reason no Republicans voted for it is no Republican was involved in drafting it. And after you look at what happened in the last months of the Trump administration, we had three or four different COVID relief efforts that were passed on a massive bipartisan basis, CARES Act 1, CARES Act 2, the PPP program. It's a shame that Biden and Pelosi and Schumer decided to go in the direction of a partisan bill that's $1.9 trillion, add significantly the national debt. And by one analysis I saw, only spends 1% of the money actually on COVID relief. Bails out blue cities, blue states, unions, provides $1,400 stimulus payments to people in prison, to immigrants who are here in the country illegally. The list goes on and on. I don't doubt that there are some good things in the bill. It'd be pretty hard to spend almost $2 trillion and not do some good things. But I think for Republicans, they feel like they should have been consulted. They should have had an opportunity to offer direct feedback. And for that, I think you would have had some Republican votes. So this reminds me a little bit of the stimulus bill that Obama passed in his first year. They made that a partisan exercise as well. When you do that, you do not have the other party invested. And so now the Democrats either have to make sure that this thing works, and if it does, they'll benefit from it. But if it doesn't work, they're going to pay the price. And if you remember, in 2010, Republicans won 63 seats in Congress, the most in history. And I think there's a chance that that kind of wave could be coming.
Jamal, I do want to give you a chance to weigh in here.
Just a little bit. Yeah, I would slow Matt's roll just a little bit here in this way. The very first meeting that President Biden had in the White House with legislators was with a group of Republican senators who came to the Oval Office to have a conversation about the bill. The problem is those Republican senators didn't put anything on the table that they were willing to sort of negotiate over and to raise. They couldn't get a bipartisan agreement out of that group. So what Democrats have done, I think this is what Republicans are not used to. They're not used to Democrats saying, look, here's where we're going. Get on board the bus. Look, we'll tinker with the paint job and figure out how to get new tires, but this is the bus. Get on board or get rolled over by it. And so now Republicans know that Democrats are going to get what they want done. I think the next time they may be more willing to sit down and do a deal because they don't want to get steamrolled by the Biden juggernaut.
Well, right. And Matt, the question to me is, like, what's the Republican strategy here now? Do they feel wounded to the point that they're not going to be willing to compromise on other issues like infrastructure? Is that now out of the picture?
Yeah, I don't know, because, you know, the Republican approach on infrastructure and the Democratic approach are going to be very different. On the Republican side, you know, if you were using public dollars to leverage private dollars through public-private partnerships, I think that's something that they could probably agree on. If it's spending massive amounts of money and adding more debt to the national debt and, you know, giving away to unions and addressing things like Davis-Bacon and prevailing wage, that's going to be a non-starter, I imagine. And I think that's probably the direction that the Biden team would want to go. Look, Biden's instinct is to be bipartisan. It's what his record has been in Congress over all the 30 or 35 years he was there. That's why I'm so surprised they decided to go the partisan route, that they really didn't offer much in the way of consultation. They decided it was going to be a big bill. Republicans said they couldn't stomach a $2 trillion bill. And they decided they had to have the $15 minimum wage in there, which I think it was the U.S. Chamber or some outside group said was going to cost us 1.2 to 1.3 million jobs within the first year. So, look, I congratulate the Democrats. They did hold their votes. They got the 50 votes plus the vice president in the Senate. They hold their coalition together. But now the American public is going to render a judgment on whether this bill succeeds or not. Rhetoric doesn't matter anymore. It's either going to work or it's not, and they're going to either benefit or not from it.
I think you are right that we are going to have an opportunity to see what the repercussions of having a partisan bill is. We'll find out. But I want to move on because I think it's worth noting, too, how much has happened in the past year. On March 11th, 2020, a year from tomorrow, Donald Trump was the president, and he addressed the nation from the White House. Let's listen.
The virus will not have a chance against us. No nation is more prepared or more resilient than the United States.
We now have a new president. Democrats are in control of the Senate. The virus is still killing a lot of Americans. Jamal, reflect on this past year. What did we learn in American politics?
Well, we first of all learned the American people are incredibly resilient, and they're willing to shoulder a burden that people were worried, you know, that America had gotten soft over the last 60 years since World War II. But I think we've seen that Americans can shoulder a burden. I think that what we've also seen is that there are some Republican politicians, and I hate to be partisan, but this is partisan, you know, whether it's the governor of Texas or the governor of Mississippi, who just won't acknowledge the science that says we need to hold on a little bit longer, more mask, you know, everybody wear your mask, everybody stay a little distant, keep the restaurants open 25% or less, and let's get to the end of the finish line. But I think what we're going to see soon is that I'll give Trump credit for having developed the vaccines. What they did not do is find a way to get the vaccines into people's bodies. And so Biden has figured out how to do that, and it looks like we're going to get that done.
Matt, what do you think? Tomorrow we're going to hear the new president address the country. This is sure to come up. What will Republicans be looking to hear from Joe Biden?
Well, we'll see what his message is. You know, Jamal's right, we should follow the science, which is why schools should be reopened all across the country. There have been no outbreaks in schools. Children under 18 are not getting coronavirus, and they're not transmitting it. And so the fact that the teachers' unions are holding our schools hostage is not only not following the science, but it's really kind of unconscionable. I think we want to see what the plan is from the president. Does he have a plan to reopen schools? Where are we at on vaccines? I know the Biden team wants to pretend like there was no national plan. PolitiFact has said that's not true. They said they wanted to be the first ones to get to 1 million vaccines a day. They got there under Trump. They pretended that the Johnson & Johnson Merck agreement was something they negotiated. They didn't. Trump negotiated that. Look, these are facts. These aren't opinions. Biden's team has now gone from about 1 million to 2 million a day. That's a very positive thing. And J&J is the game changer. J&J is the game changer. It's one dose. It doesn't have to be kept in the sub-zero temperatures that the other two vaccines have to be kept in. And they're able to produce at such a larger scale. And this, Jamal, is why the governor of Texas and the governor of Mississippi and a couple other states have felt the confidence to start reopening the economy. It's because not only have positivity rates gone down, ICU bed capacity gone up, and deaths gone down to really modern lows in the last year, but it's that the vaccines are ramping up because of Johnson & Johnson. So Operation Warp Speed is the single most significant American accomplishment in the last 25 years. We do need to get past this. People still need to be responsible. Wear a mask when you can't social distance. Try not to travel. You know, use good hygiene, all of those things. But we have learned what Jamal said, which is tremendous resilience among the American people, the frontline workers, the medical professionals, people in medical research. It's been extraordinary. And even people in government, particularly at the federal level, people like Dr. Anthony Fauci, who have committed such amazing work and expertise and discipline and devotion to our country. These are true heroes, and we should all be very grateful.
Look, one thing I want to get to before we go, and we got about a minute and a half for both of you to weigh in here. I want to take a look at what's happening in Nevada this week. Bernie Sanders-backed Democratic Socialists won control of the state party. They ousted a group of Democrats that were more aligned with former Senator Harry Reid. Jamal, you quickly first. What does that say to you? Does this have ramifications beyond the key state of Nevada?
Yeah, I have some experience here. I was a consultant to the Nevada Democratic Party for 2008, 2010 political cycles. And you know, the Reid machine is a real thing. It delivered the state to Democrats in the 2008, 12, and 16 and 20 elections. And it also made sure that, you know, they won the state Senate back for some period of time and redistricted and a bunch of things. So, so the danger that people are worried about in the state is that they'll get more caught up in ideological fights than they will get caught up in trying to win elections. And so we'll see if that will happen and if other more liberal efforts try to take over state parties in other parts of the country.
Matt, I'm so sorry. I don't have time unless you can give me a two-word answer, and I know that's not fair.
Stay tuned. Stay tuned.
Exactly. Matt Makowiak, our Republican strategist, and Jamal Simmons, the Democrat. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.